So,
thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
I often make the mistake of, after I've written my lesson, then I start studying something else, which tries to integrate itself into what I've already written. And this morning, me sitting in the office before coming here, there's a guru that I'm following and some other things preparing for the retreat. And I just have to share these thoughts. One, he says, a true seeker of truth makes no assumptions. A true seeker of truth makes no assumptions. He or she is just looking. That's what you heard me say before about have no beliefs. Because once you have a belief, it sets a boundary, and then you don't want to hear anybody else's beliefs. And he also said, if I tell you your beliefs are right, does it get you any closer to the truth? Isn't that deep? And then one of them, he said, the biggest problem with human beings is they want to be right all the time. Now, I just thought that was profound. Simple, but extremely, extremely profound. So anyway, we're continuing this series on the Ten Commandments. And as I've shared with you, as I'm working with these ideas, I was telling Pam yesterday that it's just making such a tremendous change within me. I'm trying to grasp these principles in a way to teach them. And, you know, like I said, I'm very experimental, which means I like to experiment with that which I am teaching. It's just mind-blowing to really understand deeper, have a deeper understanding of these things that we've known all our lives, the Ten Commandments. So today's commandment is the eighth one, thou shalt not steal. The prosperity interpretation of that is thou shalt not seek something for nothing. All right? So, you know, an introduction to this, I don't know how many people read Eric Butterworth's book, Metamorality. I know, Sam, you have. Nobody else has read his book, Metamorality. Okay. So anyway, in his book, he says the reason for the study of the Ten Commandments is to get behind the obvious literal meaning to the deeper truths that are hidden be underneath that meaning. So at certain levels of consciousness, everyone needs some sort of constraints. Right? That's what the Ten Commandments are. They're basically constraints. And so at certain levels, you have to have those constraints. It may be, you know, a playpen for an infant, a fence or a yard for children, a curfew for teenagers. Or for adults, it may be signs like no trespassing, keep off the grass, no smoking, don't drink and drive, stay off that daggone cell phone while you're driving because you're obviously not capable of doing both. I think that was personal. Anyway. Whereas Pam's brother-in-law tells a story about they're out hiking, Courtney. And, you know, Courtney is a very... He's a vice chancellor of Rutgers University, very extremely bright. But he's very, strong-minded about what he wants to do. So there he's out hiking with colleagues from the college somewhere in Midwest. And they're hiking up this trail, and they get to a sign that says, danger, do not go beyond this point. And so they look and they go, well, I don't see any danger, so they kept going. So they came to another sign that says, you're getting closer to danger, please don't go past this point. So they ignored that. Then they got to a sign that says, past this point, you will die. At that point, they turned around. Right? So, you know, we all need different levels of constraints, you know. So, you know, constraints on behavior, like the Ten Commandments, are necessary at times, but the idea is to expand in consciousness beyond the need for constraints. You know, for children, they must be prepared to take their place in society by progressing and developing beyond childish constraints. Right? I remember when our little grandchild, when we were in Germany, all it was in the yard, it was when you stepped off the patio, there was just, you know, a pebbles, rocks that were about this thick. And that was enough for him because he got to the pebbles. You know, he's just starting to walk. He's going, nah, I ain't doing that. Right? Okay. But the constraints have to, you know, he'll get to the place where, after a week, he got to believe he just walk right across them. So, but the children have to develop to a point where they can fit into society without certain types of constraints. And likewise, we want to transcend the need for laws and constraints by actually becoming the embodiment of the law. Everybody catch that? All right. Likewise, you know, we want to understand how do I get to a state of consciousness where these things that used to be constraints are not even something I even think about anymore. They're just part of who I am. And all of us in here have done that at certain levels with certain things in our lives. So again, this is what Jesus was referring to when he said, I have come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it, meaning to realize the fullness of it beyond the typical boundaries that you would think about. So about this particular commandment, thou shalt not steal, Eric Butterworth explains, he says, he who robs another robs himself first. He makes a break in his own integrity or wholeness at the expense of his ultimate good. Let me say that again. So he who robs another robs himself first. He makes a break in his own integrity, his own wholeness. All right? So the philosophy behind this law is simply, we cannot get something for nothing. No matter what that something is, you cannot get something for nothing. Now, this is why the spiritually minded person, or who's trying to really live the spiritual life, enters into a state of praise and thanksgiving for everything, all right? And this is a consciousness that remains continuously aware of the gift of life bestowed upon us by God. And that's what the daily word was this morning? With something around that idea, okay? And so, you know, therefore not living a continuously conscious awareness of the gift of life, the gift of being having praise and thanksgiving for everything that you have, in a way is practicing getting something for nothing. And didn't I hear that in the Daily Word this morning about all the things that are bestowed upon us or whatever? I remember what it was. But all of the blessings that we were singing. You know, always being thankful for all the blessings that you have in your life. And that's, again, why you've heard me say this many times, many of us, before we go to bed at night, write in our journal at least 5 things that we're grateful for. Usually ends up being many more than that. Okay? So this idea of always being thankful. Okay? So in essence, living the spiritual life is a matter of remaining consciously aware of the presence of God in your life and consciously recirculating the resources in your life back to God. All right? Now, prayer and meditation, for example, is you're giving some time back to God. All right? And being thankful for the gifts of life that you've gotten. Service, giving of time and talent to your spiritual home or your community, that's giving back to God. Tithing of our resources is giving back to God. All of these are a way of acknowledging that we're truly grateful for the gifts that we receive from the divine. So you're always in that mindset. Even when you're paying your bills, you're in that mindset of being grateful for the fact that you have electricity and water running in your house and a house to live in and the food to eat and things of that nature. So it's you go to pay for your groceries. It's this, now we do it, we just stick the card in, right? But even when you stick that card in, it's sort of just being grateful for that opportunity to do that. But however, not doing these things, not allocating time for prayer and meditation, not being of service to others, not tithing, is in effect stealing from the divine source, in that you are receiving, but not reciprocating. And if you just said, you know, it's he who robs another robs himself first. He who makes a break, he makes a break in his own integrity or wholeness at the expense of the ultimate good. So it's this process where you're always aware of being this divine connection, no matter what it is you're doing. Always aware of the divine connection. And often, you know, many will look at another and say, boy, how fortunate they are. You know, they got all of this. I won't even ask, but I know we all do. I've done that at one time or another, you know. And most of the time, you know, we say how lucky they are, but we don't understand how much time and energy and struggle they may have gone through in order to get whatever it is that they have, okay? Whether it's, you know, a great talent or a career or a state of being or a relationship or whatever, there is usually some sacrifice or focus that they had to go through in order to get to where they are. Is that you follow me? Okay? Now, from the standpoint of metaphysics, you've heard me talk about the period of struggle and, commitment and suffering, possible suffering, as being second force. Now, all of you, some of you, most of you know about second force. I've talked about it many times. But for those who have not heard about second force, it comes from the idea of first force, second force, third force. First force is this desire that you have for something in life, something that you want, something you feel when you get it, it's going to make you happy. This is the thing that'll make me happy, right? Has anybody ever said that? Okay, all right. And so, you know, it's the inner drive to acquire something that links you to this concept of happiness. And in one of the things that I was studying yesterday with Deepak and Sancha Guru, they were talking about this idea that nothing happens other than in consciousness. Nothing. You know, and we're going to really talk a lot about that in the retreat, this whole idea that everything is consciousness. And Deepak is a scientist, and Sancha Guru is pure spiritual consciousness. All right? He knows nothing about science. So it was interesting hearing the two of them come to the same conclusion that nothing happens without consciousness. So when you say, if I only had this, then I'll be happy, that's just an illusion in your own consciousness, okay? And second force is the time and energy, struggle and sacrifice that you must commit to this focused process of expending what you have to do in order to fulfill the thing in first force that you say that you want, all right? And then third force is the accomplishment, the attainment, the fulfillment, the realization of the thing, person, position, or mental satisfaction that you were seeking after. Now, these three forces are guide, you know, they guide us. They're guided typically by our heart's desire. This is what my heart desires, all right? But many people have succumbed to or given into the pressure of second force because they just, for some reason, couldn't get through it. You know what I'm talking about? All right? And when we give up our striving to achieve our heart's desire, our goals and our aspirations, we often turn to wishing, hoping, praying that the thing we desire could somehow just be dropped in our lap. Okay? And I think it's fair to say that at one time or another, every one of us in here have been guilty of wanting something for nothing. Lord, just give it to me. Okay? All right? Wanting the divine source to, you know, to just hand it over to you. And all you want to do is a little bit of prayer. I do a little bit of prayer and the Lord just give it to me. All right. And this, I said it again? Yeah, right, right. And this is usually symptomatic of a state of mind that feels in some way incapable of achieving its desires on its own, right? Whether it's from feeling defeated or just plain tired from having expended so much energy with seemingly little results to show for it. How many people have had that experience? You know, you put in, you're done, and you keep doing, you're praying, and you're doing your thing, and it seems like that which you're striving for just never comes to fruition, okay? But for whatever reason, it is the struggles of second force that we fantasize and wish that what we desired at some point, can I just have it? Can't you just give it to me, Lord? All right? But as true students, it's imperative for us to remain conscious of the fact that God is not only omnipotent and omniscient, but God is also omnipresent, meaning always present as a presence. God is always with you. And God is omniactive. Now, I think I made that word up because I can't find it anywhere. But God is omniactive, all right, meaning always working for our highest good. God is always working for our highest good. And Jesus said this in John 5:17. He says, my Father is working still, and I am working. Right? Now, notice that he acknowledged that God is working, but he's also pointed out that he's doing his part to bring about the divine plan. Right? But the thing that inspired Jesus to go through what he had to go through, and you know what I'm talking about, that second force was his inner knowing of his oneness with God. And that's why he proclaimed, the Father and I are one. You have to always understand that no matter what you're doing it in God, and God is doing it in you. All right? Just like one of the things I listened to yesterday said that the ocean, the drop is in the ocean, but the ocean is in the drop. All right? So all of God is in us all the time. So not having this conscious oneness with God can cause a legitimate feeling of being alone. Legitimate, justifiable feeling of being alone. How many of us have felt that? You just feel alone, like, God, where are you? All right? A feeling that we cannot achieve our goals by ourselves, whatever that goal may be. And again, even though there may be people around us who are helping us, okay, supporting us in our goal, there's still this feeling of being alone. In Inc. magazine, which is a magazine for entrepreneurs, it says one of the greatest things that entrepreneurs go through is feeling alone. They might have a whole team, but they can still feel alone. You get that energy, you know? So this probably comes from the realization that no matter how many people there are to help and support us, we still must do the work necessary to transform ourselves and to transform our lives. That being whatever is required in the realm of second force for us to evolve through and get to the consciousness of third force. Right? And again, as I explained, in first force, you typically can't have third force because you have a first force consciousness. You get what I'm saying? It's second force that helps you to develop and evolve to eventually be in a third force consciousness. So thou shalt not steal is many times, for many of us, in a first force consciousness, we want third force, but we're trying to steal it without going through second force. Is that making sense? Okay. And so nobody can go through that transformation for you. You have to go through the transformation. I have to go through the transformation. Something that Deepak said yesterday about doctors heal. He said, doctors don't heal. He said, doctors don't heal. They aid in a process, but they themselves are not doing the healing. The patient has to go through a transformation from believing that I am not well to I am well. All right? So we have to do it ourselves. And this is the reason why the psalmist sang, he was wise enough to sing, yea, though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. The psalmist knew the importance of keeping his mind in common union with God, no matter what the circumstance or condition. He knew that he would have to create within himself the light that he needed to get through the darkness. Okay? But when we operate from a state of mind that believes it is separate from the divine mind, there's an illusion that we are the source in the idea process and we are creating our own good. That's a tough process. To think, I did this. I am doing this. This is a false assumption that causes us to put unnecessary pressure on ourselves because in our minds we feel, I have to do this. And we're missing the divine assistance that God is providing. So whenever you think, I have to do this, you're negating the fact that God is right there to give you all that you need to get you through this process. And let me tell you, when you become aware of it, it's powerful because the stuff just keeps coming up. It just keeps coming up for you. because you're open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth working through you. And this again is why Jesus was wise enough to proclaim, I of myself can do nothing. He was reminding himself that the life spiritual force within him was doing the work. Now, to work effectively with this teaching, it is crucial that we understand the important part that consciousness plays in all of this. Everything is consciousness. It is imperative to the success of our spiritual transformation that our consciousness, our awareness must remain constantly connected with God. We always have to stay in that whole realm. And they were talking, again, in this thing I was reading, that science, that there are 150 things that scientists cannot figure out. And the number one thing is they cannot figure out consciousness. Because they were thinking that it came from the brain. But they know now it is not coming from the brain. And as this guru explained, he said it's not coming from the brain, it's coming from all of this. And then Deepak explained scientifically how, and I can't name him in DNA, he broke it down. He said there are four elements within us that are the same elements in the entire universe. They're the same elements in a person, in an animal, in a tree, in a banana. It's all have these same four elements. And he says those four elements are what makes you connected to everything that's in the universe. Isn't that powerful? So they said, so scientists can't figure out what consciousness is. They know it's not the brain. Now, the explanation was done that the brain does not even have, with all the billions of cells, it still doesn't have the capacity that the entire body has to connect with all there is. All right? So it's like sort of just remaining aware of the fact that all this good in the universe, I have this connection to. And that helps you to break down from this idea, or it's just me that has to do this, to be same open and receptive to all that there is. But one of the biggest contributors to the formation of your consciousness is how you define yourself, how you perceive yourself. And again, marketing people have a lot to do with that. It's like, again, when I was hearing this morning, the guru said, he says, you know, you have a belief, but it's not your belief. It's a belief somebody gave to you. Your mother, your father, your minister, your guru, somebody gave you that belief and you claimed it, but it's not your belief. So we got to kind of try to understand what is really going on. Who am I really? When somebody says, who are you? Like one time, I think I'll tell you the story. I was interviewing with the CEO of Marriott Corporation, and he said, so if I was to talk to your wife and ask her to define you, what would she say about you? Well, basically, he's saying, what do you think? You know, she's not there, so I have to say what I think, who I think I am. You ever get that question, tell me about yourself? Isn't that a crazy question? You don't know where to start, right? Yeah. So you remember that we have been defining consciousness as a sum total of all the stuff, good and not so good, we've accumulated from all the circumstances, people, and events that occurred in our lives. All right. Again, what I just learned that from a scientific standpoint and from a spiritual standpoint, our consciousness also contains seven generations of memories. You ever have stuff that you do or believe or think about and go, where did I get that from? Where did that come from? Seven generations of memories because of DNA and genes and these four things that I can't remember. And that's mind-blowing that I've got a lot in here that I've got to deal with, okay? So the nature of this lifetime of accumulated experiences establishes a certain state of mind, and that becomes a bridge between our outer and our inner life, okay? Or our inner and outer life, either one. So, you know, you have stuff that's going on in here, and you have stuff that's going on out there. You think that stuff going out there is separate from what's going on in here. But again, what's being proven is that what you're experiencing out here is going on in here, and you're projecting that out. You're creating that process. We've heard that many times before, okay? So we usually will only be able to accomplish or acquire those things which are in accord with what we believe about ourselves. So a multi-billionaire. Any billionaires in here? If there are, we need a nice donation, all right? Right? But you think of the life of a billionaire, a multi-billionaire. I've seen on the internet the 25 wealthiest women in the country. One of them was worth 50-something billion. But, you know, you think about it, a billionaire. I don't know how many zeros that is. It was some movie we were watching, and the guy was calling them the triple comma people. And the guy with triple comma, you know, zeros, comma, triple comma people, right? Okay. So, but your mind might say, well, geez, I'll never be a billionaire. Why? Because the ceiling you've created in your consciousness that you can't break through is stopping you from doing that. How many people told me to do the thing about how to train a flea? Wow, been a long time. If you take a flea and put it in a jar, fleas jump, okay? So if you put a top on the jar, the flea will jump and it keeps hitting its head against that top. And eventually what happens is that it stops jumping so high. And then you can remove the top and the flea will never jump out. That's what has happened to us. We're fleas in a jar that have hit our heads enough times that we won't jump high anymore. All right? So the key here is we want to develop a different state of mind. All right? If our state of mind deeply believes in its ability to accomplish or achieve what it can perceive, it will. If we can hold that thought in our mind, it is both inspiration and perspiration that leads to achievement. We must be courageous enough to do our part, which is to be an open channel through which divine inspiration that God is can transmit its divine ideas, its creative ideas through us to help us fulfill our dreams. We need to get out of the mindset of I can't and into the mindset of I know I can through God's inspiration. However, the eighth commandment is telling us that if we receive divine ideas, divine guidance, divine inspiration, divine comfort from God mind, we must be willing to give back a portion of our time, our talent, and our treasure in return. Okay? At the college, we're doing this OER process, Open Educational Resource, I was talking about, developing courses with no textbook course. All right, so I've done it with one of my courses. I worked all over the summer to get it together. The textbook normally costs $300 for that course, and I got it to a situation where they only have to pay $30 and they get all the resources. And not only that, they can download all the resources and keep them forever. All right? So I did all the work to pull this together. And then I was in a meeting on Thursday where another instructor said he's trying to do it with the same thing, and he's asking me questions about it, and the department chairman is standing there and says, I can't figure out how to pull it. And I said to the department chairman, if you would like, you can take my course and completely transfer it into his. Already set up. All right? As I was working on it, inspiration was telling me and guiding me to the resources to pull it together. You get what I'm saying? So it's not mine. And when I sent it to him, he sent me an email and said, thank you so much. Well, I said, you have to understand that all that we create comes from a power greater than us. That was what I wrote back to him. Okay. But does that make sense? You understand? You know, if you get caught up in this is mine and I don't want to share it and all that kind of stuff, you're stealing from the universe. So the commandment, you shall not steal, is basically saying you cannot get something for nothing. And if you keep living your life trying to get something for nothing without giving back, you may experience some gains in one part of your life and losses in another, because the universe is going to balance itself out. Okay? And an additional, deeper meaning of this commandment is, you shall not take or try to hold on to something that does not belong to you, that has not come to you by right of consciousness. An attempt to circumvent this cosmic law is mental theft, even if it appears to be perfectly legal or justifiable. It just came to me. But you realize that you didn't have the consciousness that really drew it to you. Something, and somehow you need to get. It's as simple as, I don't know how many of you have ever gone into a grocery store, you know, went up, paid for all your stuff, got out to the car, and realizing that under the thing you hadn't paid for something that was down there, and said, oh, I got to go back and tell them I didn't pay for this. Or you just put it in the car and say, oh, heck with it, you know, go. All right? That, you know, see, it's all little things like that that work this process. So we are robbing ourselves daily, moment by moment, as we turn away from spirit and to the material world, complaining that something in our lives is not enough. How many of us have done that? It's not enough. The extreme truth of spiritual economics is God is enough. God is enough. Meaning if I have my conscious communion with God, then all that I want is going to come to me. Because I have that conscious union and I'm willing to do what I am being told to do from this divine inspiration that comes through me. Simple things, simple ideas. So as is recorded in 2 Corinthians 12:19, Paul proclaimed that the Lord said, my grace is sufficient for you. And that's really a powerful one. My grace is sufficient for you, which is basically saying all that you could ever need or want, you will find within the divine guidance, the ideas, the wisdom, the comfort, the healing, the inspiration you receive from your common union with God. My grace is sufficient for you. All right? And grace, remember, lifts you up from where you are to a higher state where you can now understand the ideas and things that are being given to you. You get it? See, down here you're going, oh, I don't think I can do that. But the Spirit just gave it to you, so you can do it. So through grace, you let go. And when you let go, you find that you will be raised in consciousness, in vibration, to have the courage to do that thing which was given to you to do. Now, a simple spiritual exercise to follow is that when you need something, first give something. When you need something, first give something. And when you give boldly from the gift of God, from your faith in God, but at the same time give humbly from a place of praise and thanksgiving for the grace that God is in your life. If you need something, give something. That's why I tell you about this guy years ago who told me, if all I have is $10 and I need more money, I find somebody who needs that $10 more than I and gives it to them. Yeah. So when you feel as if you do not have enough, or that by yourself that you are not enough to achieve what you desire, this is the affirmation I want you to think about. I have faith in the universe every day. I have faith in the universe every day, knowing that having God in my mind, in my spirit, in my heart is enough. I have faith in the universe every day. Say that with me. Knowing that having God in my mind, in my spirit, in my heart, is enough. Amen.